What I'm presenting now is a unique blend of what I learned from Rav Mendel Kessin and what I learned from my Rebbe Rav Parnas Shlita. Okay, so I'm going to try to present a total methodology in learning from start to finish, meaning from the grassroots of the Gemara through serious lumbus. Okay, so again, I'll try to identify what I heard from Rav Kessin and what I heard from Rav Parnas. It goes like this. First of all, I'm going to move a little fast. The goal of learning should be obvious. The goal of learning is mastery. Okay? We don't ever learn anything that we don't intend to master. If you're going to learn something and you're going to learn it like a first grader and then say you know it, well, obviously that's silly, right? Nobody learns earth science in 10th grade in high school walks around saying, I'm a scientist. Right? And anybody who learns at a very superficial level, even Gemara, cannot call themselves a Talmud Chacham, cannot call themselves a Lamed. Okay? So the goal is mastery. What are the, we'll call it the different components of mastery? One, you should be able to know the material well enough to have close to instant recall. Okay, that's a big one. To be able to recall what you learned, right? How frustrating is it that we learn something and then 2 days later you're like, what was that Tysus again? I don't know what that Tysus means. Yeah, it's, we should be able to know it in a way that we can recall it. And though there obviously will be a Chazara component, the Chazara doesn't need to be 500 times. Yeah, so you should be able to know it in such a way that you can Chazar it appropriately and be able to retain the information. That's one component of mastery. Another component of mastery is to apply the knowledge. Right? One of the great things about Rav Eliashiv is he was a superb lamdan, as we can see from his svarim, but he was also he was able to apply the knowledge. Somebody came to him and he was able to extract the different principles. Right? One only needs to look in Igros Moshe to see how Rav Moshe Feinstein was able to extract the principles and apply them to the halach. Okay? So, recall, application. Here's another one that people don't think of as valuable, but the truth is it's very valuable. Speed. The speed with which you learn is critical to being considered a master over the material. For example, if I would ask you guys to do addition, you would be able to do it, I hope, fairly fast. Why are you able to do that fast? Because you've acquired a level of mastery, right? If I asked you to do actuarial mathematics and a deep understanding of statistics, it might go a little bit slower. Maybe not for all of you, but at least for some of you. And personally, you all know that I failed math in high school, so I probably couldn't do it at all. That's why I married an actuary, right? As we marry our opposites. Yeah, so I literally married my opposite. That's a schmooze for a different time, why you marry your opposite. You marry your opposite because you marry the opposite half of your soul. But that's a separate issue. Okay, and the biggest component of mastery is clarity. Okay? You cannot be considered a master until you have clarity. Now, what's the question? What's clarity? Okay? So clarity is knowing something's definition and what it belongs to. For example, if I ask you what the heart is, I go over to a guy and say, what's a heart? And he says, oh, it has ventricles and aortas and different chambers. You have any idea what he's talking about? No. Why? Because he's describing details. If you want clarity, the first thing you need is a definition. So the heart is a pump. That's what it is. It's a pump. Yeah? Don't tell me it's a muscle. It's true that it's a muscle. I have many muscles in my body. Don't say it belongs to the cardiovascular system, because that's what it belongs to. I want to know first its definition. The definition is that it's a pump. What does it belong to? The cardiovascular system. Pumping blood to the rest of the body, bringing oxygen to the rest of the body. Now, once you understand what the heart is and what it belongs to, you can start to say it has multiple chambers, aortas, ventricles, capillaries, right? I think that's true about hearts, right? Yeah, that's the you have to know, in order to get clarity, you need to know what something's definition is and what it belongs to. Now, when we apply this to learning, specifically to learning Gemara, we have an inherent challenge. Most of us, unfortunately, did not learn what we needed to learn before we learned Gemara. Why? Because the role of Mishnayos is to bring clarity. Mishnayos gives you, this is why Rav Yehuda HaNasi chose Mishnayos, chose to take the to write, to choose Mishnayos and not Toseftas and not Brises. Yeah? They're all Tanaic statements, but what Rav Yehuda HaNasi did is he built an entire structure of everything that exists in Yahadus. So, why did he choose these Tanaic statements over other Tanaic statements? He chose these Tanaic statements because they give you the structure. For example, when you learned science, right, the first thing you learned when you learned biology is they taught you what is science. You remember that? It's for all of us, it was the same thing. The first thing they did is we're going to define the word science. And they said, science is the study of everything that is. Why did they give you that? Because that is the biggest structure in science. After that, there's other subsets of that structure. And each one of those subsets has different branches. That's what learning Mishnayos is. When you learn a Mishnah, the first thing you have to do is you have to extract the principle of the Mishnah. So for example, if you were learning the first Mishnah in Makos, everybody here did Makos last year? Yeah? Or this year? Yeah? With the first Mishnah in Makos, if we were structuring that Mishnah, that's a very difficult one to structure, because the Gemara itself gets involved in the nature of the structure. But let's take the first Mishnah in Makos. The first Mishnah in Makos is discussing Edim Zomin, yeah, who attempts to make someone into a Ben Grusha or a Ben Chalutza, or Edim Zomin who attempts to send somebody to Galus. And what does the Mishnah say? Ein Omer Miyasa Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza Tachtav Elo Loka Arbon. Right. And the same thing for Galus. Ein Omer Miyasa Tachtav Elo Loka Arbon. How would you categorize such a Mishnah? Because remember, you want to create, what's the structure? How would you categorize it?
After you know the Gemara.
Excellent. So what does that belong to? So you guys are saying very well. You're saying it's cases of Edom Zomen where they're getting Makos. What is that a part of? Let's go up. Let's go up on the structure. Edom Zomen. So there's something called Edom Zomen, and then there's the punishments that Edom Zomen can receive. What are the punishments that Edom Zomen can receive, guys? Kasher Zaman, meaning exactly what they tried to give, and Makos. Now, it happens to be that the Gemara brings that the last Mishnah in Sanhedrin says you can either get the reciprocal punishment if, as a result of our testimony, two people are getting a punishment, one of them is male and one of them is female, the Edom Zomen will get the male punishment. And then there's also, yeah, then there's also Makos. So there's a category called Edom Zomen. Edom Zomen can get a punishment, and that punishment can be one of three options. Yeah? Let's take it a little bit higher. What are Edom Zomen a function of? What are they part of? Edom. There's something called Edom. Not all Edom are Edom Zomen. Right? There's something called just Pashut. We caught them in the cross-examination. Right? So not every Ed becomes an Ed Zomen. And what are Edom a part of? The Ed Bezdin. And what else is involved in a Bezdin process? You have Dayanim. You have the cross-examination of the witnesses. The witnesses themselves. Other witnesses that come in and contradict those witnesses. Yeah, the different litigants, right, exactly. So you see that whenever you see something, in order to understand it, you have to know what it is and what it belongs to. Edom Zomen cannot be understood in a vacuum. That's what Mishnayos do for us. So the first thing when a person is learning Mishnayos is you have to understand that Mishnayos are part of a very beautiful, big structure, right? That's Aleph. Beis, there's Gemara. Now, here's the thing about Gemara. It assumes that you know Mishnayos. Okay? Now, that is an assumption that perhaps is true in Yerushalayim, but may not be true for anybody sitting at this table, and I include myself in that, right? I remember Rav Zucker 15 years ago pushing me to learn Mishnayos. I didn't listen. I was foolish. The value of learning Mishnayos. Gemara is not a parish on Mishnayos. We're going to discuss what Gemara is. But Gemara assumes that you understand Mishnayos because Mishnayos gave you the overall broad structure. Like for when you go to medical school, right, you can't get accepted to medical school unless you have certain prerequisites. So everybody here, hopefully, has a Seder in their day, even if it's just 15, 20 minutes of learning Mishnayos. Yeah? That's hopefully. Now the question is, what's Gemara? Because that's really what we're sitting here to understand. How should I be learning Gemara? So Gemara, first of all, one thing I'll tell you about Gemara. It requires precision. When you're learning anything, the pace that you should be learning is, do I understand this line? If you understand the line, then you can move on. If you don't understand it, you cannot move on. And in order to say that you truly understand it, you need precision. So now let's understand, what is Gemara? So, very different than Mishnayos, where we said Mishnayos is the Tanaic statements that give you a structure of everything, a Gemara is the analysis of a prat. Right? Remember how we started before when we said, you know, if I ask you what a heart is and you tell me about capillaries and ventricles and left chamber and right chamber, I don't know what you're talking about? So now that you know all the basic structures, we can start to fill in the different pieces. That's Gemara. That's what Gemara is. Now, the way that the Gemara does that is twofold. Number one, there's something called Mamarim. It's different statements of Chazal, Agadatas, and the like. That is 5% of Shas. 95% of Shas is broken down into what we call a sugya. Okay? Now, a sugya does not mean a topic. A sugya means a question, a treatment of that question, and an ultimate solution. The ultimate solution does not always come at the end, but it's always within the treatment. Yeah, it's always somewhere there. It could be at the end of the treatment, in the middle of the treatment. Sometimes we go back and modify different solutions, but it's always there within the greater context. Sometimes the solution is teku. Yeah? And you might not like that solution, but that has to do with your own psychological inadequacies. Right? Accepting the fact that the answer is not yet known is part of life. Right? I think that's one of the things we've learned here. Yeah? There's always a question, a treatment of that question, and an ultimate solution. The treatment of that question is called a dialectic. There's a back and forth. Back and forth. Yeah? So there could be a suggested solution, a rejection of that suggested solution, a rejection of the rejection, a new... Yeah, you can go back and forth. You've seen this before. There are seven challenges that you encounter when you're learning Gemara. Challenge, the first three challenges are what we call literary challenges. Translation is difficult to come by. Punctuation is non-existent. And verbalization. Half the time when you hear guys, when you see guys reading a Gemara, they sound like they just got off the boat. I'll tell you I have to be Yotze for Ellie Bernstein. I have to be Yotze one story. One quick story. Yeah, can we handle one quick story? There was a guy in Mevaseret, my Shana Aleph, that decided he was not going to attend YU. He wasn't going to attend YU, no problem. But the Bochin from YU showed up, and somehow this guy's name was on the list. And they wanted to place him. They wanted to see where he belonged. So he had to sit down to do the placement. So he told me, he said, "You're not going to believe what I'm going to do." I said, "What are you going to do?" He goes, I don't want to tell anybody until I do it, because I want to see if I have the guts to do it." So he takes his bechina, and he's like, you see the entire time he's trying not to crack up. Why is he cracking up? He decided to read the Mishnah like a total Amaris, just to see what the Bochin's reaction was. So that year we were learning Psachim. So the Mishnah starts, Orla Arbarasar Bodkin as a Chametz La'or Aner. On the night of the 14th, you search for chametz to the light of a candle. Here's how he read it. Or arba, or la arba, if you have four lights, eser, or 10 lights, bodkin, you have to search. As a chametz la araner, by the light of a candle, you have to burn all of the chametz. And you see the bochein's face is like this the entire time. Uh-huh. You know, he's just like... Because there's no punctuation in the Gemara. You don't know when to start and you don't know when to stop.
He could be right.
And maybe he's right. Maybe he's right. I agree with you, Marty. Maybe he's right. So you don't know the punctuation, you don't know the verbalization, and you don't know the vowelization. Okay. But that's the easy problems. Yeah. In case you were concerned that those are the difficult problems, those are the easy problems of Gemara. What are the challenges? What are the real challenges? Well, the biggest challenge is that Gemara is the analysis of a prat, right? That's the way we defined it. You don't have enough background information because you did not go through Chumash or Navi or Mishnayos, you don't have enough background information to understand the prop. Because in order to get clarity, what do you need? Understanding something definition and what it belongs to. You don't have the background information. Don't worry, it gets worse. The Gemara was written like a notebook, and it's missing massive gaps of information. So for example, a famous Gemara in Kiddushin, it's one of my favorite Gemaras. The Gemara says, this is Aisha Niknes B'Shlosha Drachim, and the Gemara darshans from there, three and not four. What was the Mishnah excluding? So the Gemara suggests perhaps it was excluding Chalipin. You know what Chalipin is? Pick up a handkerchief in order to be kona something? So the Gemara says, okay, so why was it excluding Chalipin? And the Gemara answers, Isha bepachos misheva pruta lo makanya nafsha. A woman for less than a sheva pruta will not sell herself. You realize that even if you got all the translation and punctuation and verbalization right, that statement on its own makes no sense. What does one have to do with the other? That's why the Rishonim come in and they fill in the gaps. That's where a machlokes from a Rishon starts. Yeah, Rashi has a suggestion. It's a gnai for her, Rashi suggests. It's a disgusting way of doing it. Taisus has a different suggestion. Yeah, the reason that the Ramban, Rashba, the Ritva, the Rashi, what are they all doing? They're all doing the same thing. They're filling in the gaps of information. Now I want to hit pause just for one moment to explain to you that there's different types of Rishonim, but I want to highlight the difference between Rashi and Tosfos. Okay, the Rambam is codified halachically, so we're not discussing the Rambam here. But Tosfos seems to be more on the daf, right? Not just because he's on the daf, but because he's more focused on the daf. You know what the word Tosfos means? What does the word Tosfos mean? Addition. Tosfos is an addition to the Gemara. That's what Tosfos is. He's an addition to the Gemara. Tosfos almost always asks what the Gemara doesn't say. You ever see that in Tosfos? Tosfos all the time asks. He goes, how come the Gemara didn't give this solution? Right? Or how come, what about this question? Tosfos is literally an addition to the Gemara. And there's a reason that Tosfos was written the way he was written. Rashi didn't write himself like Tosfos. The Rashba didn't write itself like Tosfos. Tosfos wrote like a Gemara. Isn't that true? He asks a question, then he gives an answer. Sometimes he comes along and rejects his own answer. So he gives a different answer. See? What is that exactly like? It's exactly like a Gemara. Tosfos wrote a tiny little... He wrote a mini Gemara. He wrote a mini Gemara. So, translation, punctuation, vowelization... background information, yeah? Gaps, notebook. That's where the Rishonim come in. But it gets worse. Remember how we said the Gemara was written like a dialectic, going back and forth? You know, guys, if you went to Harvard, you could concentrate in debate. That's something called concentration in a debate. The Gemara was written like a debate, which means you have to learn how to analyze a debate. And most of us did not grow up in a way that we were taught how to analyze a debate. So what we have to do, what the main work that we have to do is teach you guys how to understand and analyze properly a debate. And that's what we're going to hopefully begin to do in this year right here. The last point, which is in my mind not a point at all, and it's a very Shana Aleph point, it's not a Shana Bet point, is relevance. Rabbi, it doesn't mean anything to me. What has it got to do with my life if a shore goes an ox? Yeah? What's it got to do with my life? Yeah, and we all said that at some point in our lives, right? But that's a foolish question. The reason why it's foolish is because if you're living a Torah-dic life, you want to know what the Torah has to say. So again, if a guy came over to me and said, what's the relevance? I would have a conversation with him about it. But to be perfectly honest with you, it's not really a problem. Yeah? And don't call me rabbi. Yeah? So, now that we understand what a Mishnah is. A Mishnah is the structure of everything. It gives the definitions and what it belongs to. And a Gemara, we understand the six problems of a Gemara. It's the analysis of a Prat. And we understand how it does it. Now let's learn, now that I've told you what everything is, now you can understand, now I'm going to start teaching you how to do it. Okay? Now, just so that you appreciate what we're doing here, do you realize that everything that I've given you right now in this year is structured perfectly? First we did the definition of a Mishnah. Yeah? We said what it belongs to. We did the definition of a Gemara. The challenges of a Gemara. What a Gemara is. The reason why you can remember what I'm saying right now fairly easily is because I'm giving you clarity. That's what I'm giving you. Yeah? In fact, you'll notice that I don't have any notes in front of me. The reason I don't have any notes in front of me is not because I've done this shiur so many times that I've memorized it. It's very simple. Because when I learned this, I learned it categorized. And since it was categorized, it made sense. Okay? And you can remember something when it's categorized. Just like if I asked Gabi, if I asked you to memorize a series of numbers, 100 numbers in a row, do you think you could do it? Yeah. Not sequentially. I'm gonna 19, 40, 37. You couldn't do it, right? But if I asked you, even with a pattern, if I said 3, 6, 9, 12, you could do it ad infinitum. Why? Because whenever there's a pattern to something, whenever it's clear, you can remember it. Okay. Here's what you ought to be doing when you sit down to learn a Gemara. Okay? And I know some of you now, you're Baruch Hashem, very into learning, and some of you are telling me you're struggling with Gemara. So what do I need to do in order to really understand what I'm learning? Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to make sure that you understand what the Gemara is attempting to do. So you have to identify the beginning of the sugya. The beginning of the sugya is the question that it starts with. There's different types of questions. What do you think is the main question that the Gemara asks? Almost always you'll see this in the Gemara. Minahani mili. What type of question is that, guys? It's a source question. So what I do when I'm sitting down to learn a sugya for the first time is I sit with a pen and a paper, right? I have it as part of a notebook, but it doesn't have to be. And I identify, I write, and again, I've been doing this for a lot longer than you guys, and I'm still doing this. I write out, step one, question. And then I write, if it's a source question, I write source. What's the source for B'nai Grusha or for Edom that are testifying falsely about a Ben Grusha, Ben Aban Chalutza, that they don't become B'nai Grusha, B'nai Chalutza? The answer to that question, of course, is because there's a pasuk, lo v'lo lazaro. If you remember in that Gemara in Makos, the Gemara suggested a kal v'chomer, u'maha mechal einu mischal, ha'bo lechal lo chilul einu din shelo yischalel. Yeah? And the Gemara rejected that. And the Gemara says, ela mechavrta k'deshanin en meikara. So the ultimate solution is what? Lo v'lo lazaro. So whenever I'm mapping it out, the first thing I do is I have to make sure I have clearly what is the Gemara's attempt. Then what I do is I map out the different stages of the Gemara. So the Gemara, step two, offers a solution. Then step three, the Gemara sometimes rejects that solution and sometimes it challenges the solution. Sometimes it rebuts the challenge and therefore remains with the first solution, which would ultimately be the solution. So the first thing you're doing when you're learning a Gemara is you need to map it out. You need to chart out the terrain. Charting out the terrain means that you understand each step of the Gemara. It is foolish to run to a Rashba, to run to a Rambam, if you don't understand Pasha Pshat Gemara. It's silly. It's silly. Now, the reason why I left out Rashi there is because very often what Rashi does is create clarity, because remember, it's written with gaps, so if you don't understand something, it's okay to run to Rashi. You should run to Rashi, because Rashi will help you understand each step. But you map it out. You map it out. And then when you have a sugya, you should be able to go over it a couple of times and to be able to instantly recall the question, the treatment of that question, and know clearly the ultimate solution. If you've mapped it out, the Gemara opens itself up, it's revealed to you, and it begins to make sense. If you have not mapped it out, the Gemara will not make sense to you. Very often, what the Rishonim are doing is they're discussing different stages in the Gemara. And I see guys get very confused because they don't know. They're like, they're thinking that the Rashba is commenting on one stage in the Gemara, and actually the Rashba is three stages earlier or two stages later. So it's really important to make sure that you're being precise. You know exactly what each stage is. The Gemara attempts to solve, then rejects. gives an alternative solution. And whenever I see that that's the ultimate solution, I make an asterisk there. That's the ultimate solution of the Gemara. At the end of the day, if you know this methodology well, you can chazer a blot and a half of Gemara in under a minute. In under a minute. You guys remember Alex Mel? Alex Mel chazered, including the hardest, in my opinion, the hardest Rashi and Shas on the Mishnah and Makos on Gimel Amud Aleph, in under a minute and a half. He knew the entire thing. It's not because he's a genius, though he happens to be smart, but it's because he used this methodology. I could do it for you right now. There's three types of punishments that Edom Zomim receive. Makos, the reciprocal punishment, and the male punishment if there's two punishments. The source why they don't become a Negrusha B'nei Chalutza, Lo V'lo Lozaro. The source why they don't go to Golos, Hu V'lo Zomim. The hint in the Torah that they get Malkus is Vitzdiko Tzatzatik Vereshios HaRasha V'ahayim Menachos HaRasha. The Gemara rejects Losane, but some Rishonim hold that that's the actual source, and Vitzdiko is just supporting Losane. Why don't they pay Kofar? Kufra Kapara. Why don't they become Eved Ivri? Not so simple. Rav Hamnuna says that they do become Eved Ivri in one case, where neither the Nidon nor the Edom Zomen have money. But Rava comes along and says, "B'gneva sova lo b'zomim." Rav Akiva says, "Ed Zomen Meshalem Al Pi Atzmo." Means if he's moda, if he comes into court before the psak din, yeah, if he comes into a different court and admits that he became Edom Zomen in a different court, he's moda beknas and therefore he's pater. Why is Edom Zomen considered a knas? Because at the end of the day, nothing happened. Then there's Eid Zomim Mishalim Lefi Chalko. The Gemara suggests a whole bunch of different possibilities of what that could be. But the bottom line of what it could be is either they came before the Psak Din and said we were found to be Edom Zomim in another court, that would go against Rav Akiva, or they came after the Psak Din and therefore it would even be in line with Rav Akiva. That was a blot and a half. If you asked me, that's correct. But once you know, this is important. Yes, Jonathan. I just asked the question and the answer. But if you asked me anything in between, I'd be able to tell you too. The theory is that if you remember the question and the ultimate solution, the treatment becomes natural. So I could do the treatment too. But the point is that I've extracted the principles. I've made it part of a larger structure. Now imagine if you could do that on an entire Masechta. See, in order to be chazer shakla v'tarya mila b'mila bal peh, know it like that, you'd either have to do one of two things. You'd either have to devote the next 60, 70 years of your life to learning, or you can be Rav Yedidya. But those are the only two options that I know. That's it. Listen, he knew shas bal peh by the time he was 17. Yeah.
So how do we become
that? And as Rav Hananya says, I also have a photographic memory. I'm just out of film. Yeah. But, yeah. There's no way to gain a photographic memory. But you can improve your mind by learning in a structured way. I am not a genius. And I didn't do, and I'm not able to do what I just did because of massive chazaras. I'm able to do it because it's structured, it's organized. The same way Gabby could probably repeat 50 numbers in a row as long as there's some pattern. So one of the challenges of what some of you have come to me and said I'm having difficulty with Gemara is, it's because you're not learning the Pashup Shah. You have to be focused on the Pashup Shah. And don't be embarrassed to take out, Eina Baishan Lomid, don't be embarrassed to take out a pen and a paper and literally chart out the terrain. That's what I do. If you would see my notebooks, you'd be like, Rav Berg is in like 7th grade. I write out, it's a source question, it's a logic question, it's asking for a proof, yeah? You have to chart out the terrain. You can't go into Lumdus before you know Pashup Shah. Now, what is Lumdus? Because some of you are telling me, you know, you're in Shir and your Rebbe's throwing at you all this beautiful Lumdus, yeah? I shared with some of you guys Lumdus before, right? What's the nature of the Shomer? Is he a Motzi Aveda or is he a Shomer? Here's what it is. Lumdus is, and by the way, without Lumdus, you can't be called a Talmud Chacham, because if you just learn the Pashup Shah, so it's beautiful, but that's not the end of the road, obviously, right? So the Lumdus is, I know that offends some of your sensitivities, but it's true, yeah? No, it's okay. The biggest Gedolim were the biggest Lamdanim. All you need to look, there's a black sefer called Ha'aros, yeah? From Rav Yashiv. Rav Yashiv's Ha'aros are filled with Lumdus. Lumdus is the analysis of the different components of a halacha. Okay? So remember we said Mishnayos is the structure of everything, gives you the definition on what it belongs to. Gemara is the analysis of a detail. Lamdas is the analysis of the different components. Let's give an example. You guys are learning Eilu Metzius, right? So what are the different... A person finds an Aveda. What are the different components of that halacha? You have the Aveda itself. What else do you have? The finder. The Baal.
Where?
The Makom. Simon. Now, if we were involved in Lamdas, all we're doing, and again, I know it sounds like so deep and so... It's obviously very important, but all you're doing is you're analyzing the relationship of these different components. So, for example, right? It's not just a question if it has a simon, if it doesn't have a simon, right? There might be a machlokas rishonim on, say, what's called yish, or what's the way that yish works. It's just analyzing the component of something. So it's just analyzing a particular component, right? So, for example, you've all heard of the lamdas chafza gavra. That's like a classic Brisker lamdas, yeah. My Rebbe called that primitive Brisker lamdas. You know, not to say that it's not totally chashuv, but the point is, it's like, you know, certain scientific theories of 200 years ago. We've come a long way since then. So Rav Chaim Brisker, not to be mezalzel him at all, because he meant something very deep when he said this, but Chefza Gavra is a classic Brisker lamdas. Yeah? Now, what does Chefza Gavra mean? It means, what are we focusing on? Do we say that it's the object? Yeah? Like you had this. The object is being towain. You guys have heard this, I'm sure, already this year from Rav Safra, that the object itself is demanding that it be returned. It projects that it needs to be returned. Or you've heard him say stance. Have you heard him say stance this year? Okay? I'm sure you've heard stance a lot. I remember when I did Eilu Metzius with Raparnas, it was a lot about stance and the projected stance, yeah? What is that really? It's just the analysis of a particular prat of the halacha. When you have clarity in the stages of the Gemara, and you see a machlokas Rashi Tosos on a gap, you have to understand that they're not arguing because they were in different laboratories, and Rashi said, this is what came out in Rashi's laboratory, and this is what came out in Tosos's laboratory. Yeah? No. And by the way, not even in the Gemara itself there's lamdas. What do you think? You think Rava felt this and Abaya felt that? He was having a bad day, so he went with this pshat? No, that's silly. They had a thesis statement. The thesis statement needs to be analyzed. Now, I want to explain something, and we'll end with this. Again, unless you have any questions, in which case we can continue. But I want to explain something to you. The word vikuach means argument. The word machlokes does not mean argument. What does machlokes mean? Chelek. It's a chelek. It's a split. So whenever you have a machlokes, your job is to unify the machlokes, to put it back together. Because each one of them are describing a different chelek of the machlokes. Yeah? So when Rashi says one thing and Tosfos says another, they're not disjointed. They're really together. They're analyzing something together. Yeah? Rashi says this part, Tosfos says this part. You understand? So they're just arguing on a small, small aspect. One of the big lomdim of today's dar, Rav Moshe Wolpin, once said that the job of a true lomdin is to take what seems to be things that are very far apart and put them back together. Okay? So let's chazer over very quickly what we learned. Yeah? Because I'm trying to give you principles. Number one, what is Mishnayos? A group of Tanakh statements. What do they do for us? They give us the structure of everything that's in Torah Shebaal Peh. Does that mean that everything is included in that? No. That's why there's still Toseftas and Brisas and all sorts of things. Yeah, Mamarim from different Tanoim. But what they do is it gives us the basic outline. Okay? Then what is the Gemara? The Gemara is the analysis of a detail, the analysis of a prat. How does the Gemara do that? Two ways. A Maimer and a Sugya. What's a sugya? A question, a treatment of that question, and an ultimate solution. What are the challenges of Gemara? Translation, punctuation, vowelization, background information, notebook style, and it's a debate. And of course, relevance, but that's not really relevant. Ah, you like that. That's a good Rebbe joke. I could get smicha for that joke. Yeah? Then there's What's the way that we learn the Pashup Shot? You got to chart out the terrain. You got to be childlike about it. You have to say, what type of question? Don't just write out the question. Identify what type of question is it. Then identify what is the Gemara seeking to do here. Is it a rejection? Is it a kasha? You have to. There's all sorts of different things the Gemara is doing. Then, and you have to be precise about each stage in the game. There's an ultimate solution. When you're chazering, what should you chazer? The question and the ultimate solution. The treatment you will remember naturally. What is lamdus? Lamdus is the analysis of the component parts of what you've learned. So Rashi and Tosfos are built on different thesis statements. That's how they came to what they came to. You have to extract the lamdus by putting them back together. So if Rashi says one thing and Tosfos says another, you have to figure out how are they really basically together, what are they really the same on, except they argue on one prat. So like we gave an example earlier today. Rashi says that if you find an object, again, assuming that you meet the criteria to sell the object, Rashi says you can't sell the object to yourself. We're concerned that you're going to be sort of giving yourself the best price. Taisa says, nah, don't be concerned. He already was machriz the object. He's not going to be a liar about it. So what Rashi feels this way and Taisus feels this way, right? I'm sure Rabbi Safra would say it like this: a little bit more, a little bit less. Yeah, it wasn't just an emotional day. That's how they felt. No, there's an analysis. The analysis is to touch up what is this guy who's returning the object. What is his status? Rashi holds he's just a shomer. Taisus says he has a whole new chalos shem where he's a machzer aveda. And therefore, we don't have to be suspicious of him. But what you have to do is you have to get down to the basic components of what they're talking about. That's what lamdus is. Okay. Any questions? Okay. Shlomo. Sorry. Eitan.
What did you say that?
I wasn't just pulling like a Rav Isaac somewhere. I look at one person. And, yeah. Eitan.
When you're saying that, when you say that Tom and Tom need lamdus and like they need to like be able to do that and stuff. So what's the difference when people say, oh, like it's harder, more acute, and they like back and all
stop
this.
Stop it, Rabbi Avadi Yosef was like, a tremendous lamdus.
I'm not saying no, but I'm saying like what's the difference then between the way they learn? Everyone
okay, so there's a Gemara. There's a Gemara that talks of Gemara and Horios that discusses two types of learners. One is called a Sinai, and the other is called an Oker Harim. A Sinai is somebody whose knowledge is very, very broad. You did Horios? Did you do Horios?
No, but they talked about
something called Okay. So, Sinai versus Oker Harim. And Oker Harim is somebody that can overroot the entire mountain. They can upturn the entire mountain. That's with Lamdus. Different people have different netios. Some people are more noted to having breadth of knowledge. Some people are more noted to going deep, deep in a sugya. But the Gemara never meant to suggest that those people that are Sinai are not Lomdim. Imagine a Shaila came to Rav Elyashiv, yeah? Imagine a Shaila comes to Rav Elyashiv. You think Rav Elyashiv didn't know the lumdus of the sugya? How could he have paskin the sugya if he didn't know the inner mechanics of a sugya? How could Rav Avadia have paskin the Shaila if he didn't know the mechanics of the sugya? Everybody has to know the mechanics of the sugya. What we call, just to clarify, what we call balabatish, somebody came to me, they were offended that they were called balabatish by their Rebbe. It's not. So what does that mean? Because I said a Baal Batish thing, now I'm going to be, you know, the guy said to me, he says, what does that mean? So now I'm going to be working and not learning for the rest of my life? So I said, first of all, that's not what Baal Batish means. Baal Batish just means that you're being sort of, how shall we say this nicely? It means that you're being sort of simple, simplistic about the Gemara. Yeah? You're being simplistic.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Well, if it's true, it's true. But the point is that you can't say that you understand the depth of something. Nothing in our life should ever be without depth. Yeah? We would not want our tefillah to be without depth. We would not want our raising children to be without depth. Right? Nobody would ever say about their children, I get the basic idea of what they need. If your child needs something, you want the depth of it. It's the same thing when it comes to learning. Imagine a big businessman. Yeah? And somebody's trying to explain to him a product that's going to help him. Nah, I don't really need to know this. Just give me the basic outline. Sir, you're going to really need to understand this product in order to use it, right? It's a very American thing not to, again, maybe it's a male thing, not to read instructions. Yeah? But like, it's a little bit of a foolish thing. Yeah. Assembly required. Yeah? I don't think there is a difference. The Rambam was a tremendous Lamdan. I don't accept that generality.
What?
He's saying that certain sects of Jewish society are more noted towards certain things.
Who's saying that? I'm saying like I don't understand. Everyone always says
this. There's a difference. There's a difference. Again, I don't buy it. Well, I don't buy it. You have to go deep. Everybody means you should go deep. The biggest Sfardi Gedolim were the biggest Lamdanim.
Really?
Yeah, of course.
We're just like kind of a
Moshe Rabbeinu was Sfardi, you know?
Everyone was Sfardi back then.
Yeah, Moshe Rabbeinu was Egyptian. I know I shouldn't say this on tape, but he wasn't S.Y. You know, like, he wasn't an S.Y. I know the Syrian community would be very upset at me for saying that. He was Egyptian. He was an Egyptian Jew. Isn't that how the Torah calls him? Ish Mitzri?
But he wore a black
and, I'm sure he wore a wonderful strimal and a kapata and the whole nine yards. Yeah.
I just heard this over the last year. I've heard this word thrown around. What does Teich mean?
Teich means to translate.
In Yiddish? In makeup?
In Yiddish. No, in Yiddish. Teich is it means to translate. But what it could be used as sometimes is new Teich it up. What
right.
It really means is to get to the depth of it. Like, let's define it.
I learned with my uncle over the summer and he's like ridiculously Jewish.
He's just
like, he said
Teich
it, like,
up.
Every three words.
Yeah. Okay. New, what's the Teich? It means what's the understanding. Let's get to the depth. Zalman?
What are the Achronim?
The Achronim are involved in analyzing the Rishonim. They're involved in Lamdas. The Rishonim were involved in Lamdas, but the Achronim are very often Teiching. That's for you, Shlomo. They're Teiching the Rishonim, and they're giving depth and profundity to them. They're showing what they really meant. Okay, guys? So if anybody wants to sit with me at some point in the next couple of days and just get an example to go through a Gemara, I'll be happy to do it with you. I don't think now is going
to
work for me.